Produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall, this is Yes Music Podcast, episode 428, Yes Album Sleeve Notes.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 428 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along a little bit later on. Please do get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. It's another, I hope, week of normality courtesy of the YMP, at least for a short time. I hope you're well and coping with the current situation. This week, in a bit of a departure from the usual format, Mark and I took a look at some of the sleeve notes which come with Yes records, CDs and so on. We both chose our favourite three examples and talked quite a bit about the different kinds there have been through the years. There's an invitation to suggest your own favourites on the show notes for this episode, and also the news that we will be speaking to Sid Smith next week on the show. In case you're unaware, Sid recently updated his essential King Crimson book, and is also the author of many essays for sleeve notes, including the Stephen Wilson Yes remixes. We're very much looking forward to that conversation. Around the interwebs this week, and starting with the YMP Facebook page, Tom Brislin added a cover of Sound Chaser by his band Spiraling. And guess what? It's a stunner. Tom not only channels Mraz's QPR performance brilliantly, but also sings. Give yourself a treat and experience this rendition. Preston Frazier exhorted us to watch Eddie Jobson's violin solo at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Roxy Music's Out of the Blue, and Oliver Wakeman found lots of old CDRs, which contain, as he put it, all the demo and preparation CDs for the music that ended up on the Yes official albums From a Page and Fly From Here. Those must be worth a few bob. Preston was back with his orange vinyl tribute to Keith Emerson and Greg Lake, which features both Billy Sherwood and Jay Shellen. And Daniel Crone talks about Fly From Here Return Trip. His verdict? It's not bad, but I was slightly disappointed, which is strange, as I loved the 2011 version. Fair enough. Dave Watkinson was up to his old tricks again by digging out photos of himself with Peter Banks this time, as they share the pre-production version of his book Perpetual Change. Wonderful photos and story from Dave. And once again, Preston was back with his copy of the Green Album by Eddie Jobson. In the visitor posts, this week's haul from Jeffrey Mason includes his new copy of Peter Banks' autobiography, Cashbox magazine from 1977 with a huge feature on Yes, which you can download free of charge from archive.org, a review of All My Yesterdays by Steve Howe, a photo of a US student listening to the first Yes album, a YouTube clip someone has put together which contains every time John Anderson has said river. That's in lyrics. It's a lot of fun, actually. And a note of all the memoirs published or supposed to be forthcoming by Yes members. Doug Curran joined in with lots of photos of his Eddie Jobson Green Album collection, a Japanese green vinyl one, a promo one, and so on, as well as a promo copy of Alan White's Ramshackled. And rather more up-to-date, his new copy of John Kirkman's Tales from Photographic Oceans, in which no fewer than 50 of his own photos are printed. John Dee added a mint photo of the drama lineup and a wonderful misty stage shot of Chris Squire in 1984. And finally for this section, Brian Sullivan spotted that incredible Tom Brislin and Spiraling Sound Chaser cover. Just a word on the recent Dave Watkinson Warriors EP competition. If you'd like to win the copy of that, you have until next Thursday to send your answer in. That's the 23rd of April 2020. I'll announce the winner on next week's show. Over on Twitter, just a few highlights included Yes Official announcing that all the European dates, which were supposed to be this year, have been rescheduled to next year. All tickets will be honoured. And Brian Dilly got his hands on the Steve Howe book. Still waiting for mine. As always, thank you very much to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including the show notes commenters, Scott Goodall, Doug Curran, Ken Fuller, Dave Watkinson, Joseph Cottrell and Michael Handahan. Yes. Marcus here with me now for a rather unusual episode of the Yes Music Podcast. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How's the situation over in Canada?
Well, it's going okay. The Prime Minister has informed us that, you know, while things are kind of getting a bit better, to not, you know, expect anything to be loosened yet until at least maybe June or July.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that does sound like a long time away. So we're going to talk about sleeve notes this week, and in particular, obviously, Yes, album sleeve notes. And my impression when I was thinking about this, Mark, was that there were possibly three different types. This could be completely wrong, but my idea is that there are three different types of sort of approaches to sleeve notes when we're talking about albums. I think normally when I've seen bands' first releases of particularly their early albums, then you might have sleeve notes which include, for example, the lyrics of the songs, a few details maybe of the personnel that's on the record, the production credits maybe, instruments even perhaps, recording location and that kind of thing. And certainly that's the case with the very earliest Yes albums, I think. So if you think of something like the first album, Yes, Time and a Word, it had those lovely diamond-shaped lyric sheets in there. Now, those are actually some of my favourites. Do you like that approach of having an additional sheet with the lyrics in?
Yeah, I always thought that it was interesting. There's something very retro, obviously, about that sort of approach. I don't know what it is, but it's very almost comforting looking at these kind of early ones, because for especially somebody who's doing a band himself and releasing his own stuff, it's kind of interesting to see how they approach their earliest stuff too. Because, you know, I'm guessing that since they were a new band, you know, funds would be limited for them because, you know, they're taking a chance on the band, so they don't know how much is worth spending on them at that point, right?
Yes, that's right. But I do think those are rather attractive, those first ones. But then when you get onto something like Close to the Edge, the classic, there is very little on the album itself, but sleeve notes inside, of course, are those beautifully done Roger Dean handwritten calligraphy of the song words. But still, you only really get the song words and then, you know, the published by Yes songs and reproduced by permission and all that kind of thing. There's not a great deal of detail in those earlier ones. And I'm sure that's got to do with the time as well. If you went back into the 60s, into the 50s, I'm sure the amount of information you got on records was probably quite minimal. Is that your impression?
Yeah, I would say so as well. I think that the approach to it, though, was very smart. I mean, I don't know how it is on the pressings. Well, no, I do know because I correct myself. I do know because I do have the UK pressings of this album and other ones. They did keep it pretty uniform as far as the inner sleeve being green to match the color of the album. And they all had that sort of handwritten writing inside. And, you know, I think that was probably at that point more important artistically than anything else, was the continuity of the inner sleeve with the rest of the record.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I suppose those original ones with the separate diamond shaped, as I say, lyrics sheet, that also, you know, gets carried on into that from the appearance of the outside. Now, when you get as far as something like Relayer, I love the packaging to Relayer because it's got some extra elements. The original one that I've got anyway. So you've got the beautiful Roger Dean outer cover, of course, with that fantastic painting on it. Then inside you've got the little band photo and the names of the musicians and a few little details, Eddie Offord and so on. But then you've got the separate poem, which is not really explained. It's just a really nice poem which talks about snakes coiled and granite and horsemen riding to the west. So it certainly appears to be describing what's on the front cover. Yeah. And then even more so, I've gone on about this previously on the show, I'm sure, and then more so inside you've got this beautiful cardboard, which is a really sort of tactile cardboard inner sleeve for the record, which has got the lyrics on it. So that as a whole package, we've still not got as far as having really extensive sleeve notes for these albums, but certainly I love that relayer effect. Everything seems to have been really beautifully crafted to give the same sort of impression as the front cover.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely one of the more better looking layouts of it. Again, I think there was a lot of continuity with it as well. I mean, the colors were very consistent from the front cover to the inner sleeve. I mean, but again, there, one of the things that I found interesting was you mentioned the thicker material used for the inner sleeve. Now, right there, that's obviously cost them a bit more coin to get that done. Mm-hmm. But then at that point, I mean, Yes, we're, you know, a phenomenon and a very big seller for that whole record label. So no questions asked probably for something like that.
That's right. And that's why in some ways we're going back in time to Fragile next that I've got in front of me here. You can probably hear me messing around with all the the covers here. But of course, Fragile had that amazing booklet inside. And that was only available, I think, on some of the earliest pressings. Certainly the copy of the first copy I had of Fragile, which I bought in about 1986, didn't have that beautiful booklet inside. It did have a gatefold and the lyrics, and really for the first time it explains those five solo tracks inside there, tells you what they are, how they were put together and why, personally arranged and organised by the five members of the band, Cans and Brahms, etc. But then this is the first time, I think, really, you've got a proper additional booklet in there. So it's a full colour booklet with lots of really nice photographs of the band, and also two unique Roger Dean paintings. The one on the back cover of the little booklet I absolutely love, which is a guy mountaineering up one of those amazing peaks that Roger Dean constructs, which is lovely. And then on the front cover is a very unusual Roger Dean in a very unusual style for him, I think, a sort of overgrown scene of undergrowth and strange creatures coming out of it, which I'm not sure exactly what that's got to do with anything, frankly, but but that was the only example in those early albums, really, I can find that there was an extensive attempt to create something a bit different inside.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I found interesting about that is, like you, one of the earliest copies I got of that on vinyl did not have that.
Yeah.
And when I went and started going deeper into my collecting of albums, I found it interesting that I looked on Discogs, and whenever I would look up Fragile for a different pressing that I'd be interested in, I'd always read in the notes there, it would say, booklet not attached on this version, or booklet is unattached. The staples are not connected. I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, and I'd always be kind of scratching my head, like, what's going on? So finally I took a dive in and said, okay, I'm going to get this Canadian pressing. They said it's near mint, and it said in their booklet included intact. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get it. And then lo and behold, it got sent to me. It was, you know, I wouldn't say it was near mint, but it was in very good condition. And lo and behold, there was this nice booklet stapled inside to the gatefold. And I was like, wow, this is what they're talking about. And yeah, it's definitely a very nice addition to the album. And I think that they were also trying to show that this record was very important to the label as well as the band, because, you know, they had Rick Wakeman in now, so they were trying to give it that proper push. And if you remember, Steve Howe went in there and, you know, started stomping his feet apparently at the record label saying, we want this album promoted, you know, so they probably went that extra mile to get this done.
And of course, it's the first Yes record with Roger Dean, and the first thing they got him to do was the beautiful world on the outside, of course, of Fragile, and then this completely separate booklet. And I think a lot of people forget this kind of addition. That's why I wanted to do this episode about it. It's absolutely fascinating how it develops for the band from the early days. And I'm going to put as many photographs as I can on the show notes for this week to show you what we're banging on about here if we don't have the exact copies. But so when we get to Tales from Topographic Oceans, of course, there's quite a departure. And that was necessary because this is the concept album of concept albums, isn't it? And so we have, you know, big section of writing first on the gatefold inside there, explaining what the whole concept of the album is and where the ideas came from, and then beautiful inset photographs showing all the different songs and complete lyrics to the whole lot. So yeah, quite a departure.
Oh yeah, definitely, and very beautifully done. This was, of course, done on the inside of the gatefold, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because if I'm correct, I think most people just got regular sort of inner sleeves with this record.
Yes.
What I found fascinating is now, as I've gotten older, I'm finding the text a little bit more difficult to read than I did when I was 20
yeah,
years
quite
old.
Small.
Yeah. When I was 20, I was like, this is great, reading along with the story and all the sort of notes that John Anderson provided within there. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that I really, really enjoy about having, you know, inner sleeve notes and stuff like that. And I'm sure you'll agree with that too, that having these kind of extra things written about each song and, you know, what it means was very helpful for like a young musician or even whatever age musician to just kind of follow along with what's going on story-wise.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, things that take that even further would be Elias of San Hilo, the John Anderson solo album, which has the whole story included in it in another amazing booklet. Mm. And it always reminds me of in the 80s when I was started to collect Yes records. There wasn't an internet, of course, nothing like that. Computers were in their infancy, and I couldn't find any books on Yes. So what I was doing was trying to piece together the story of the band from the sleeve notes.
Mm.
And so with the revolving door policy of Yes, of course, I was even struggling to work out exactly who was in the band for different albums sometimes, because it wasn't always very clear. So to have something like that on Tales, where it really goes into depth about the ideas behind the album, was absolutely fascinating. But yeah, interesting that in those original pressings, the actual sleeves on the records themselves, completely plain. Hmm. So if we come really right up to date, and we've got things like digipacks and all sorts of different ways of packaging CDs, something like the Fly From Here package had a much more extensive booklet inside than you would get in the first repressings of CDs from the vinyl. So with the copy of Fly From Here that I got, it was in a nice booklet format and which folds out, and there's an additional DVD in there, and the CD itself, and then a very interesting booklet. But that, I think, is a bit of an exception to the later Yes albums. Something like Heaven and Earth has got a booklet, but really inside all you've got are some photographs of the band recording the album itself and the lyrics. There isn't any more detail about the way that it was put together, what the songs mean, and all those sorts of things. So it depends really on which album you're talking about, but I don't think there's been a massive effort in the more recent ones to include a lot of detail in sleeve notes.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, there is one that I will talk about when we get to our three that we pick that I think will fall into that category. But it is interesting, though, that you talk about, for example, the Fly From Here release, because I did also have the original one on CD with the extra DVD and stuff like that. And then, of course, we both got the Fly From Here Return Trip version,
yes,
both on CD and vinyl. And I was always kind of half laughing and kind of shaking my head at the fantastic Photoshop work of them removing Benoit David from the photograph there. I was kind of like, really? Like, I mean, I know, Trevor, that you want full credit for everything, but you're really going to erase the guy from history as well? Like, come on. I thought that was a little too far with that. But it is interesting that they do that, that they put in, you know, little extra notes in there and stuff like that. But of course, with those kind of extras, we got the benefit of another song that got added to it as well, which was nice, complete with the lyrics. But, you know, they also could have went a little bit further, I thought. I mean, a lot of bands that I've seen, when they've done this sort of reissuing of an album, they would add, you know, even stories or little, you know, little things by other authors, like our Sid Smith friend and other people in there that would add in like little thoughts about the records in there.
Yes, that's right. And one extremely good example, maybe you're going to mention it, is the latest album from a page, which is of course music from around the same time as we're talking about Fly From Here. And there's an extensive note in there from Oliver Wakeman himself telling the story of these songs, and it would have been very disappointing and very confusing, I think, perhaps, to release something like From a Page without that kind of extensive explanation. And there's some lovely photographs in there of Benoit David and Oliver and with the band, and it's a really great production, that. And then you have also the lyrics as well. So that's an exception as well. And I think that brings me on to what I would call my second category. And that's re-releases, reworkings of different albums. And you've already mentioned one, the Fly From Here Return Trip. And there's that from a page. And initially, when they started doing the first CDs, was that around 2003-ish when they started bringing out the first ones, which didn't necessarily sound very good, and the packaging was what you might call minimal. So if you were lucky, you got the same contents as on the original album, but sometimes it was very, very flimsy indeed. And so those ones didn't really push my buttons in terms of what was on the show notes itself. But when they wanted to give something a special push, interestingly, I've noted that things like Keys to Ascension, now that package came, I think it was the first one of them that came with a poster. So it was in the cardboard sleeve, the CD, and there was a poster inside, and perhaps that was because around that time, if you think about when Keys to Ascension came out and what they were doing and the fact that it was a live album combined with studio tracks, they were really trying to give it a bit of a push, so they included extra elements in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the CDs that I got that I was very thrilled with, actually, because when I got Keys and I opened it up and there was that poster in there, I was like, wow, this is fantastic. And it's still one of those posters. I have a little special padded envelope, like a really big one, that I keep all my kind of special posters from these kind of releases in there so that they're in good condition still. And that's one of the ones I've really treasured and held on to, is that Keys to Ascension one. And I think that that's something that's kind of rubbed off on me as well, as a person who makes records as well. I try to include posters like that in my own album releases, right? So, because I find that people really appreciate those kinds of things. And I think that Yes did a great job with doing stuff like that. But I got to agree, those early 2003 reissues, there were some of them that sounded better than others. Some of them were a little wonky. I think Joe Gasket or something like that was the guy who remastered it. And he did a good job on some of them. I thought that the Yes songs reissue that he did was pretty good. The booklet in that was pretty good. Like, it sounded a lot better than the, because I have an original Canadian like 1973 CD of it, and man, that thing is like like all kinds of tape noise on it, like, and this is on CD, okay? It's like, wow. It's like, you can't crank that, otherwise it's like, it sounds like you have an open window or something, you know, in a car going 50, you know? So it's unbelievable how some of them sound, the early ones. But but the packaging, I have to agree with you. Like, some of them, I remember opening them, and it's just really just like the names of the people in the band, and maybe just a few things, and that's it. It's like a single sheet, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. And so that was a pretty disappointing, to be honest. But certainly those have improved over the years as we've got new and different ones. So my third category would, I think, be special editions and sort of retrospective compilations. So obviously, if you're taking the time and the trouble to produce a new spruced up version of something and taking the time to remix it, even like the Stephen Wilson remixes, then you would expect some really good sleeve notes in there. And this is, you've already mentioned Sid Smith, and we've spoken to Sid Smith on the podcast many years ago now about his Stephen Wilson remix sleeve notes. And in fact, he's agreed to come on the show next week to talk a bit more about sleeve notes and what he thinks is important and how he goes about actually putting them together. So that'll be a fascinating conversation. Mm-hmm. So yes, you would expect quite a bit of extra information, and that's what makes those packages particularly exciting and interesting for us 5%ers, isn't it? He goes into great depth and detail. So you've got all the technical details for the geeks amongst us who like that sort of thing, and then a specially created essay about the importance of the record and you know how it fits into the chronology and interviews with the band, and those are really great, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one that comes to mind right away is, of course, the Fish Out of Water reissue that came out. That came with the four CDs and the album redone and the 2 7-inch singles. And, you know, and there was all kinds of, you know, extra written stuff inside the book there. And there was, you know, that DVD that had the whole, you know, audio commentary by Chris Squire. There's like, there's those kind of packages are fantastic. And you have, you know, the Stephen Wilson reissues that you mentioned. But it's also interesting to make note that there's been a few 180-gram reissues that I had gotten. Was a Fragile, and it was also a Drama one. And it was just a pretty much a recreation of it exactly as it was. No extra anything, nothing, but it sounded better. But the main thing that people were always kind of going on about was how perfectly they recreated the original exact like layout of it. So that's sometimes what people kind of look for as well, is like they just want the original thing and they want a perfect version of it, because a lot of people have, you know, ring wear on theirs because they're like 20 years old, or they have a rip or a tear in it, so they want a perfect version of it. And not only that, but you have now a 180-gram version, and hopefully if you have someone like Kevin Gray who did the remaster, you have a sonically better version of it as well.
Yeah absolutely. And so the whole experience is hopefully upgraded
yes.
in that sort of a way. But I'm just looking through the sleeve notes to the Relayer re-release with Stephen Wilson there. And, you know, they've gone to the lengths of having a different Roger Dean artwork cover of the interior notes there, which is based on the original. I don't know if it was probably find out by reading whether it was an original study for the original painting or what it was. But then inside you've got amazing things like the original master tapes, photographs of those, and photographs of the original. You'll be able to tell me what this is. You know where they have the track listing and then the different instruments and vocals and so on, which are
The track sheets
planned out. Track sheets, yeah. So you've got that, and then technical details about how it was put together, and then this extensive Sid Smith essay, really, all about the album. So that's absolutely beautifully done.
Well, the track sheets are something that I find amazing to include, especially for somebody like me who is very much into the whole audio engineering end of things. And I was always aghast when I would read some of these track listings, and like the drums, for example, you'd read it and it'd say track one, kick drum, track two and three, overhead drums. And I'm like, really? Like they only had three tracks for drums and they sounded this fantastic. Yeah. Which goes to show you that it doesn't mean that they had three microphones necessarily. It just meant that they dedicated one track for the kick drum, and on the mixing board, they might have had like 9 microphones on the rest of the drum kit, but they shunted all those mics to just 2 stereo tracks on the tape machine, right? They had to kind of make a pre-mix of those other microphones together, and once that's done, what you have on those 2 tracks is what you have. You just can just adjust the volume of them. That's it, right? So I was always kind of flabbergasted, because you know later on when you see like Billy Sherwood famously posted a track sheet for a new state of mind from Open Your Eyes on Twitter. Oh, yeah. And, you know, there it's much more laid out, you know, kick, snare, toms, overhead cymbals. So it's much more, you know, much more spread out and more control over the overall sound. Like you'd have a DI'd bass guitar and then a cabinet microphone for the bass. He'd have several different microphones for, you know, guitars. Like it was just more spread out because he had between, let's say, 24 tracks to 48 tracks to use, right? But back then, on some of these early ones, I think, you know, Chris Squire was saying how excited they were when they finally were able to use 16 track for like Fragile and Close to the Edge, right?
Absolutely, yes. And these are the sorts of things that it's fascinating to go back and have a look at over and above the wonder of the music and newly scrubbed up versions. It's great fun to dig into the history of it and the technical details and so on. And really the end point of what I'm talking about with these, you know, the different kinds of sleeve notes is where you have the compilations. So the two that I'm particularly talking about are In a Word Yes, 1969-2, and The Word Is Live. Now, we haven't really talked about the live albums particularly, and usually there's more information in sleeve notes in live albums, as you would expect, because you've got to say where they were recorded and all those sorts of things. Not so actually with all of them. I don't think Yes Songs and Yes Shows particularly have extensive show notes, but The Word Is Live as a package, if you can possibly get yourself one of those, has this amazing, it's actually between the two sets of discs, this amazing full color extensive set of essays and pieces by different people. So, you know, people like Greg Lake, Mike Tiano, Bill Martin, Doug and Glenn Gottlieb, etc., etc. And just a wealth of information, and it's practically like a mini book. Amazing that. And then really as a separate mini book in a word, yes, it's a lovely, lovely sort of tall, like those long boxes that I've been looking out for recently on Facebook, etc. This is absolutely packed with photographs, a lot of which I'd never seen before, getting hold of this. And again, extensive essays and articles about the history of the band, and just a wonderful thing. So you've got not only the music, but really the whole story of the music as well from those.
Yeah, definitely. I think that those are two great picks that you mentioned. I mean, especially The Word Is Live is a really, really good package. I remember that too. Like I remember I mentioned this on a previous episode that I had bought that just before we went out on a tour that we were doing with my band. And I remember that I would, like, all the time I was one of those guys who always wanted to drive, right? I was more comfortable with myself driving than others. But when I had bought that, I remember right away saying to my friend Jerry, hey, if you want to drive, feel free. Because I was so desperate to dive into this booklet and read it. So I just openly gave the steering wheel over to him so that I could sit back and read these liner notes that were fantastic. But another one that I think that's worth mentioning, and I wish I had it with me because I had it a long time ago. I had it given to me for Christmas, but I think it got lost in a move somewhere. But I had Yes Years, and Yes Years had a huge booklet inside there, like an album-sized booklet that had all kinds of pictures and notes about the songs and records. That was another great example of that.
Yes, that's right. I'd completely forgotten about that one. I'm just looking up at it now. I need to get that down and have a look. I've got the 4-CD version of that.
I had the cassette.
I'll need to get that out and have a look at those sleeve notes. And really, when we're talking about these ones, they go long, long way past what sleeve notes have ever been. They're, as I say, they're in not even booklets, they're actual books, and absolutely fantastic stuff. So we're coming to the point at which we need to choose our three that we're particularly interested in promoting. Mm-hmm. So let's start. What's the first one of yours that you would like to highlight?
Okay, well, I'm going to start from the, I guess, the 3-2-1. It's sort of like, you know, I'll leave my favorite one for the end. So the first one that I want to promote is one that really... I'm surprised even now, years later, still has the same impact on me. And you might be kind of surprised when I say it, but let me get into a little bit more detail of it. The one that I'm picking is 90125. Now when I remember when I first got it, because remember, I had, you know, first gotten this record. It was one of the first ones I had gotten. And then I kind of worked back to the other albums afterwards. So as I discovered the back catalog stuff, I was like, wow, all these kind of wondrous photographs and paintings and, you know, stuff that, you know, mainly Roger Dean's paintings were the things that caught me about the earlier albums. But on this, but on this album, I was always fascinated by the fact that it came across as very current for that time, like very futuristic. You know what I mean? Like they weren't ashamed to kind of embrace the technology of the time at that point. Because I remember, and I'm looking at it right here in the cover notes, it says here, the cover image produced on Robograph 1000 systems utilizing the Apple II 64K RAM microcomputer, right? And it's plotted the same size on an HP 75808 line plotter. And I was thinking to myself, this is fantastic. You know, we got to remember, I was like 19 years old when I first got this record. So I'm like, wow. Because I remember in high school on my architecture class, they had a plotter. And that was like the big thing, you know, this robotic arm would grab this color and it would start drawing on there. And then it would drop the color and pick up another color. And I was like, these plotters were like state of the art then, right? So I was thinking to myself, wow, they used a plotter for the album cover. And, you know, and it also gave that kind of vibe to me that, you know, this whole, you know, layout was so thought out. You know, they used an Apple computer and all this stuff, you know, for it, you know. So
absolutely,
it very much kind of gave me that kind of vibe. And even when I look at it now, I kind of chuckle because, you know, nowadays this could be done in 5 minutes on a computer, right? This kind of stuff. Yes. But it does bring me back to that point of where I first got it and was so excited about it and like just looking at the graphic of it and thinking, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. And I do remember myself reading exactly those same words as you. And what age was I? I was 14, I think, or 15, and reading those and really being excited by it. And I was the sort of person of the 80s who used to walk down to W.H. Smith, the newsagents in Stratford, and buy Personal Computer Weekly every week on a Saturday. And I used to really enjoy that. So I was really into the computers exactly as you sound like you were. And interestingly, that fits in rather neatly with my first pick, which you could say I'm rather cheating with, because it's the CD-ROM, the active, CD-ROM active of Yes, Talk from the Inside. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that's because on the back it says, what if liner notes were interactive? You'd hear John Anderson's perspective on I Am Waiting, and Trevor Rabin would play you three different openings to The Calling and tell you why he chose the one he did. Yes, Active takes you on an intensive insider's look at Talk, the latest release by the world-renowned band that changed the sound of rock and roll. Step through your computer screen and sit in on rehearsals and performances. Then visit the music workshop to hear band members talk about their music and their instruments. And so it goes on. So, yeah, that's something I only got hold of really quite recently, but great fun. And that was an attempt right back in, what was that, 1994, to take liner notes somewhere they'd never been before into an interactive type effect. So, yeah, fantastic to see that. All right, what's your second pick then?
Well, my second pick will probably not come as much of a surprise. And again, I'll mention what it is and then explain. My second one is Elias of Sunhillo. Now, this is obviously a solo record, but by John Anderson, so I figure it does count. What I always found absolutely fascinating about this is that I had gotten a U.S. first pressing of this. Now, in the U.S. first pressing, you look at it, and it's very much like a, you know, an album cover. But then you open it, and it's like a book, in this fantastic kind of book, because when you open it up, it opens like a proper book, and it has all these great hand-drawn photographs inside, and it has like all these, like the story there. Elias had been busy and sang his song, the metallic-like trees with their golden leaves jingling like the winter snow. Like, it has the whole story in here. And it has proper pages. Like, you can hear me, like, literally, you know, flipping through the pages on here.
Yes.
And I always thought to myself, this is fantastic. And what I thought that what they did one step further is not only on the back of it, it looks like a proper back of a book when you look at the back side of it, is that when you take out the actual inner sleeve, the inner sleeve looks like it's a proper page from a book. From it, it has all the same kind of etchings and all the same things on here. Yeah. It has the lyrics on both sides on here, you know. And I just think that it's just absolutely wonderfully done. I mean, this to me goes beyond just the inner sleeve. It goes to the whole package. Like, it's they are one in a sense, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, it's just really well written. Like, the colors are all matched, the inner sleeve and the inside the gatefold. I mean, this to me is a fine example of somebody who took their job as making the layout and the design of this very, very seriously.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think mine's fairly similar to that. I'll have to get it down and have a look at it later, now that you've whetted my appetite with that. But yes, that whole package that's been put together so carefully, as you say, wonderful. All right, then. Well, my number two, so we're going in reverse order, aren't we? So my number two, it won't, again, surprise you to hear, is a little album which was released in 1978, and it's called Tomato. Now, I'm sure a lot of people
would have guessed that one.
We'll be shouting at their speakers now, saying, how could you possibly do that? But the reason is because of the inner sleeve. And actually, I think it's one of the most effective ones, even though it's completely different from all the other ones. And I'll say a bit more about why. So you've got just really the lyrics, and it's a single inner sleeve. There's nothing fancy about it. It's got a few extra things in it, like disc cutting at Strawberry Studios London and AdVision and those sorts of things. But there isn't a great deal of information on it, except that if you know it, you'll know that in the background it's got this map of all those tours in the south of England. And the middle one of those, if you look at the sleeve, is Yes Tour, and then it spreads out, etc., etc. And the reason I'm particularly excited by this is because it gives the whole album that air of mysticism and excitement for me. And also, just to the left, as I look at it here, just to the east, west, I suppose, of Yes Tour is Homerton Tour. Now, that's another real big coincidence for me, because I went to Homerton College in Cambridge. And so you've got Yes Tour, the original name of this album, just next to Homerton, which is where I was going. And if you remember the story that I've told many times, the reason I've got all these original 1980s vinyls of Yes is because my mother made the mistake of saying that she promised to buy me every Yes album I didn't have if I managed to get into this college. I did manage to get into the college, and so she hadn't realised how many quite there were of these albums. But she found herself paying for all those. So yeah, I mean, I just love the way that looks and feels. Some real Yes mysticism in that for me.
Well, I have to agree that that is a really interesting thing, because if you do look at the layout of that, it is like a proper sort of historical map, like, of this whole layout of these things. And one thing that I have to, though, make a comment about is that usually I'm a kind of fan of these sort of reissues that were done by Friday Music, right? Now, one of the things that Friday Music did that kind of annoyed me was that they turned Tomato, which was a regular album with a beautiful inner sleeve like that, they made it into a gatefold.
They did.
And they put the inner sleeve stuff on the gatefold and just gave you a regular plain white inner sleeve with the record. I was like, kind of like, meh. I prefer it the original way with the inner sleeve having it like that, because what I liked better about that, and I don't know about how you are with this, but I kind of prefer having just a single inner sleeve to look at when I'm sitting down listening to the music and stuff, than having to open up this huge thing and have it on my lap. And, you know, then you can't have your cup of tea or nothing in one hand because you're trying to balance this other thing in your hand. So I'd rather just have a single inner sleeve to look at when I'm doing that kind of thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, sure, I could just easily put down the mug and, you know, do it. But still, I mean, there's something about having that sort of original, you know, layout. I'm a kind of guy that kind of prefers the original stuff most of the time over a remaking of it. I always think the original is better.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose the extreme of that would be the studio albums set, where each of the CDs, I think the CDs are nicely designed, but each of them has a single cardboard cover, and annoyingly, the CD tends to fall out of those covers. It's very annoying. Anyway, so what's your number one pick, though? What's your favorite?
Okay, so I think most people might be kind of like, what, really? And I have to say that this by far is my favorite one. So far a favorite, in fact, that yesterday I spent most of the evening leafing through it again and just enjoying it. So first of all, tip of the hat goes out to the Gottlieb brothers for this, because this is their handiwork.
Right.
And that is the Topographic Drama Live Across America release. Now, this has three albums. It's a magnificent triple gatefold record. Okay. Now, we're talking about the inner sleeves. Now, these three albums came in a regular poly-lined white sleeve, but what came in here was a fantastic booklet in here.
It
has tons and tons of photographs, nice painting again by Roger Dean, and it has a huge amount of information on here. You know, produced by mixed by Billy Sherwood, you know, thank you notes from everybody, the team, the Topographic Drama Tour team, you know, and I mean, to me, why I like this the most is that not only do you have a live album, but in a sense, it feels like you also got a tour program included in this as well.
Yes.
And that's what I love about this layout.
Yes, I see exactly what you mean. And we're not talking about tour programs, but yes, it's reminiscent of the one that they put together for the Yes 50. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great pick, I think. And it's a beautiful looking package. I've got a copy of it just here in front of me as I'm recording. Excellent pick, I think. Well, so my top one, I think we've already mentioned it. I think I'm going to have to go for The Word Is Live. And that's because I just enjoy everything about it. Mm. And we've been talking about, you know, feeling and looking like books. And this is the whole thing just looks like a book. You could set it up on your bookcase and it would fit in beautifully. And I love the way it's all put together. But the amount of detail, the stunning live photos that are in there from all eras of the band, and especially the way people talk about the band and how important they were to them. You know, having Greg Lake doing the opening announcements. I mean, what what else would do you want? And Bob Hagger there from Mabel Greer's toy shop, and actually quite a few quotations from fans themselves. And things that you don't usually get, like the stage crew, you know, information about who the stage crew were and what they thought of all this. So I just love the way it sits in your hand. And you were talking about reading show notes as you listened. This is beautiful to leaf through and read some of the thoughts in there. And yes, Gottliebs are in here as well. They've got a piece in here, although they didn't put this package together. And I do love as a final touch, the version of the Yes logo, Roger Dean Yes logo, which is on the front of The Word Is Live. Absolutely brilliant. Very much enjoyed having a look through the collection I've got here this week, and taking a delve inside the packages that I often just see sitting on my shelf. It's been really, really good fun. Is there anything that's really surprised you as you had a think about this week?
The funny thing that I found just overall was I never realized how many of these albums had such more simplistic design than I remembered. I mean, I kind of always thought that every single one had this big elaborate layout, but you know, no, they didn't. But they didn't need it, I don't think. Like, I mean, the first couple of records had a more simple approach, mainly because they were first releases, right? I mean, even like the Yes album had a fairly simplistic release, and it was a pretty important record. But like one album that I thought that would have had a more elaborate layout as far as an inner sleeve was Union, I would have thought. But it's very much a very simple, you know, just listing of, well, after you had to list everybody who's involved in it, they didn't have any room for anything else. No. So, you know, that's probably to keep it very simple because it was all text. So,
yes, and quite possibly quite a few of those details are up for discussion. But anyway, we're not talking about Union today. That's been really, really interesting and fascinating. So thank you. Thank you for your input on that, Mark. But if you have a favourite that we haven't mentioned, or if you want to chime in with your top three, then please do on the show notes for this week's episode. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrine and Mark Anthony Kay.
Just before we go, here are the patrons, or half of them. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And half of those Yes Music Podcast patrons are Mark James Lang, Martin Kelberg, Michael O'Connor, Miguel Falcao, Neil Caffrey, Paul Hales, Paul Tomei, Paul Wilson, Peter Herndon, Lobate Scarp, Rachel Hadaway, Mark Zarkol Bags, Robert Nisa, Scott Colombo, Scott Smith, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Steve Dill, Steve Perry, Steve Rode, Steve Scott, Stephen Raw, Terence Sadler, Tim Stannard, Todd Dudley, Tony Handley, Joseph Cottrell, Keith Hoisington, and William Hayes. Continued thanks to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them to help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers and contribute financially to the running of the show, then please do go to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or just click on the button on the website, yesmusicpodcast.com, for all the details. So thank you very much indeed for listening once again this week. I do hope it is providing you a little respite from the difficult position we all find ourselves in at the moment. Before next week, remember that you should be subscribed to the podcast rather than listening on the website, because then you won't miss any of these episodes as they're released every week. They download automatically onto your phone or mobile device. Whatever you've got, an Apple device or an Android device, just go to yesmusicpodcast.com, where you'll find buttons to help you subscribe. And also you can follow the show on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Facebook. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.